Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is my new co-host, Tiffany Ellinger.
Hey, friends. That was a Jeff quote right there for you.
Hi, friend. Hey, friends.
Hey, friends.
We should both do our Jeff impression, and because he's not here today.
Yeah, okay.
So we could both be like, hi, hey, friends. It's good to be with you.
Hey, friends. I'm sensitively perceiving that you want to listen. You're going to need to listen to this today.
Everything's going to be great. You are wonderful. You are
where God's called you to be.
This did not go the way I thought. I don't have a good Jeff impression. I need to. I used to have a good Robbie impression. I have a pretty solid Tiffany impression.
Oh?
Yeah, I did it at staff meeting that one time.
Oh, yeah. Remember? But I feel like a lot of that is more like physical than it is.
Yeah, you wouldn't translate. You have to see it's the whole thing. It's like when you see those impressions of people and you can have just a voice impression, but the ones who have all the mannerisms, mm-hmm, and can
like
even
when people
like
do
contort
Jack Sparrow.
Yes. Yeah, it's a physical.
Yep.
You got to see the whole thing. When we do a video podcast, I'll do my impression.
Sounds good. That camera that's above us that nobody's using.
Yeah, it's not that hard. We've thought about doing a video podcast, but I was like, ugh.
Give us your thoughts. What do you think?
Comment below.
Leave a comment on a page.
Hit like
Send
and
us
subscribe.
A communication card.
There you go. Buy us a cup of coffee.
Ooh. I would not say no to that.
There's nobody. Our audience does not. I don't think that our audience is really the YouTube watching crowd. So nothing that we just said makes any sense to them.
You know,
I feel like
there's a few people.
Most of the people who comment on the podcast, I don't think that they are big YouTubers.
The YouTube.
I could be wrong.
Call it the YouTube.
Comment below. YouTube. Let me know.
Yeah.
Let me know what you think.
Let Jay know that he's wrong.
Let me know I'm wrong. That's always, everybody loves that.
Tuesday morning.
I will get that now. Someone will listen to that. Like, I watch YouTube. Like, I will get that text. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to text him right now, go for it. Do it.
Send it.
Do it. Send it. Full send.
Full send.
Just like the sermon this weekend.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful transition.
Yeah. I'm the king. You can't call it out, though, if you say that it's a transition.
You know, I'm just doing what you would do.
Let's try. And that's exactly what I would do. That's true. I used to do that to Robbie all the time. He would have these great transitions.
I used to listen to it.
And I would say, that was a great transition. He's like, you just ruined it. So that one's for Robbie. I threw Robbie under the bus twice. Oh, I didn't throw him under the bus. I quoted him once, and I threw him under the bus once.
I feel like that's something that he's used to, though, at this point.
Well, you think he's listening?
I think he would love to listen if he has the time. I think if Robbie's sitting down and he's either in his car or just going to be doing something that doesn't require a lot of, I don't know. I mean, actually, I think he does a lot of things very intentionally. So if he's going to listen to the podcast, it's going to be intentionally to listen to the podcast and not to do a bunch of other things on the side.
It's probably true.
You know, that's what I feel like Jeff would do that too.
Jeff is 100% not going to listen to this podcast.
That's okay.
I don't blame him.
It's because of me.
I don't either. I don't often when I'm not here.
Well, because you were here present for the conversation.
Well, that too. I never like to. Yeah. I'm no different than anyone else. I do not like hearing my voice.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. Well, that's because nobody likes hearing their voice recorded.
Why do you think that is?
Well, psychologically, they say it's because it doesn't sound like what you're. You actually don't know what you sound like.
Is it like how, ooh, there's this like theory that I was reading last week about how we were never meant to see our own faces other than like in a reflection of like water or something like that. But like to think that we know what we look like was something that we weren't ever supposed to like fully know. So like there was this like experiment where like these people ended up describing what they thought they looked like to an artist, and then the artist drew it out, and then they had other people that knew this person really well describe what they looked like, and that one, the latter one, is the one that like looked more accurate to what the person actually looks like. But the way that we perceive ourselves is not totally wrong, obviously, but we don't see ourselves as others see us.
No.
So it's like the voice thing.
No, because think about, you're right. I mean, I don't know about the whole intent. I'm not going to go. I don't think Genesis answers that question of whether, mm-hmm, we were ever going to see ourselves in a mirror like that.
In a mirror dimly.
But But I will say that there are lots of studies that kind of show, and it, well, show that very thing. We don't actually know what we sound like. So if you think, if you hear yourself on a recording and you say, that does not sound like me at all, that's why most people don't like hearing their voice on recording. It's also why we don't like seeing ourselves in pictures, mm-hmm. or seeing ourselves in video, because we say, well, that I look terrible in that. The funny thing is everyone else would say, like, no, that sounds exactly like you.
Yeah.
And you're what do you mean? That sounds like
no.
you. But you think about it, like, in our own head, we can't hear a voice. Like, it's, we hear our voice differently than we hear mm-hmm. anyone else's voice. And so your recorded voice is what is just projected out there without the ability to hear the vibrations in your own eardrums and your own whatever. But it is a very interesting illustration. We try to use that sometimes of, like, we think we know ourselves the best, but we don't.
Yeah.
Other people, you need other people in part to help you understand who you are, because we don't know what we look like. We don't know what we sound like. We don't fully know how we react to things.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been called out on a facial expression where someone, like, knows, oh, you're kind of upset, and you're like, no, I'm not. And you think you're hiding it, and you're not. How many times people always think they're really good at hiding how they're feeling and then hiding the tone. They'll say something.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, that what? I said this. Like, yeah, but you think that you hit it, but you don't.
I know how you meant that.
Right.
You know, our hearts are hardened by sin's deception, as verse 13 of Hebrews 3 talks about.
It does. And just the I think I don't know if I said this on a podcast or where I said this, but the a comedian talking about, like, looking at, if you think that you actually know what you look like, just think about how many angles you twist when you look in a mirror. You're like, nobody sees you from that exact angle through a mirror.
Nope.
That, like, that's just not it's not an accurate representation, honestly, from, you know, better and worse. I would say this, that when you look at yourself in a mirror, you never look as bad as you do to any, you don't look as bad to anyone else as you do when you're looking in a mirror, and no angle is as flattering as you try to, like, you find the one, the one angle.
No.
It's like, well, as long as everybody only sees me from this angle, from this, it's so ridiculous. But you're right. We're hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. So let's talk about hardened hearts.
Let's do it.
That's fun.
You know, what's crazy is for this, like, whole Lent season, I'm reading through the book of Exodus, because Exodus has 40 chapters. And so without Sundays, the Lent season is 40 days. And so it's a chapter a day. But I am reading on Sundays as well. But there's the repetition right now. I'm in chapter 7 of the hardening of Pharaoh's heart and how, like, that was what was preventing him from letting the Israelites go into the wilderness to worship Yahweh. So that was what. So as you were talking about this on Sunday, I was like, oh, I know this. I've heard these words before.
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's kind of insight we put you in the podcast for.
You're
40 days.
Like, yeah.
And that in Exodus, days. There's hardening of hearts. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a good example of, we don't want to be like that, right? Like, we don't want to be like Pharaoh and have our hearts hardened. And it is interesting that the psalmist calls back to it, and the author of Hebrews here calls back to it, that that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, I pointed that out, but it's such a critical piece that we just have to constantly remind ourselves that the warnings that we read in the New Testament, especially, are warnings to the church. They aren't warnings typically to people outside of the mm-hmm. faith. They are warnings to those in the church. And for a long time, I think we've had this view of, like, well, if I'm in the church, this isn't for me. The warnings are for, you know, my neighbor who doesn't go to church, or my friend who used to come to church and doesn't anymore, or, you know, whatever, people who do certain things. But these warnings are for people who see themselves as God's people, and the warnings don't harden your heart. If you hear his voice, don't harden your heart. So I'm curious, like, what stuck out to you? What is something that you feel like is something that, you know, I mentioned those three, the sleep state kind of, did you feel like that illustration made sense?
No, that made, like, perfect sense, because it's, one of the things that like C.S. Lewis talks about is he says that the Christian life is a life awake. And there's this calling to wakefulness. And I think it's Ephesians 5 that says, wake, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. And so there's this constant imagery like throughout scripture that we need to wake up. And like that waking up like takes effort, and it takes actually like we have to be intentional about what we're doing when we're when we are awake, because like in sleep, like we're kind of just there, like observing what's going on around us. We're like an audience to our lives in a sense. But I think we really are, we are in this in-between state where we are waking up to the realization that like what is actually real. So there was, man, I can't remember what book it was that I was reading, but I was reading a book about like how, like God is the standard of morality, right? Like he sets the standard of what is right and what is wrong. But it's more than that. Like God is also the standard for what is real and like what is like actual and what is needed and what is necessary for thriving and for well-being and what is meant to be for humanity. And I think we miss that a lot when we're in a dream state, because we just kind of go with the flow of things. We just are going through the motions, just letting life happen to us. But as believers, because we've been given like the Holy Spirit and we've been given this call, like we have the opportunity to wake up and be intentional about the steps that we take when we wake up, as like deliberately choosing to follow him and to enter into his rest. Because it's funny, like in verse 11, as it's quoting Psalm 95, reading in the NET version, it says, as I swore in my anger, they will never enter my rest. When they were wandering in the wilderness and not knowing the ways of the Lord. But when we do know his ways, like we get to enter a true rest. We get to enter what is real rest instead of this being in this dream state. So long story short, I think that was a good analogy. And I think a feeling that we are all familiar with.
Yeah, I think, it's always been helpful to me of just, and obviously really real to me, because I have quite the history of the sleepwalking and sleep talking. Lauren afterwards, she said, you didn't even share my favorite stories. And I said, I know I didn't, there are so many, there were so many, and but those very, it was really helpful to me during that time. It's definitely calmed down a lot. I still do it a little bit, but there was an era, right around when Silas was born, where it was ridiculous. And I just remember that being really formative to me, to just be thinking, man, that is so like trying to hear God's voice. It's that I know the voice, but it doesn't seem the illusion of the dream is so strong.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to get across, of that. Yeah, of course it doesn't make sense. And I had other things in there that I didn't end up talking about, but we read things, and like the Sermon on the Mount is a great example. There's so much of the Sermon on the Mount that will feel like that you'll be going, turn the other cheek, like, well, but I can't be a doormat, you know, and forgive or love your enemies, or other times where you're do not repay reviling with reviling, like bless those who do evil to you. Like these kinds of things, they don't seem to make sense. What seems to make sense is the worldly way that's in front of us, but there's going to come a day where that will not make any sense. Like we'll wake up, and just as surely as when you wake up from a dream and you go, what in the world was I thinking? Obviously that is not, obviously this is not real. Just as surely as that happens, that'll happen when we meet Jesus face to face. Like all of a sudden we'll go, oh, okay. That wasn't what I thought it was. And I honestly think that'll be, I think that God gives us these little glimpses, and it's not, I want to be careful, because it's not to say that what we're experiencing here is like, it's not like the Matrix, you know, that where it's a complete imaginary thing. There is reality to it that we will remember. It's not when we get to heaven. I don't think we'll just wake up from a bad dream and realize, oh, none of that was real. No, I think it's real. So the metaphor, the illustration falls short at some point. Certainly don't want to use that to minimize pain or suffering, because that could be done of like, you know, I guess I didn't go into that, but we all, I think most people have had the situation where in a dream, someone close to you did something awful, and then you wake up and you're kind of mad at them, even after you realize it's a dream, you're still like, yeah, but I'm kind of mad. But that doesn't mean that our pain and suffering is going to be like that, where we wake up from a dream, you're like, oh, none of that was real. It is, but it'll be, there will be, I think that the resurrection of suffering into joy will, we get a very tiny glimpse of that. If you've ever had a horrible dream and then you woke up and that sense of almost like just ecstatic relief and joy that it's not real, you know, that that didn't happen, you know, and the, I don't know if you ever, you know, if you've ever experienced that, like just that moment where you realize what reality is, and you're like, oh, good. Like there is something to that. I think God gives us these little Easter eggs of that it'll just be amplified to a billion degrees, what we're going to experience in that. But I just think it's hard because, like I said, the illusion is so, it's so strong. And I'm not really sure. I mean, other than trying to just point it out and call it out and then to listen, which is why I wanted to spend most of the time in the sermon talking about, well, then how do I, what are signs? Because nobody gets up any day and says, I don't want to listen to God. I mean, there are, I mean, I'm sure you could, but most people, I think in our church would say, yeah, I want to listen to God. I want to hear his voice. But the question of, well, how do you know if you're hearing him more or less? How do you know if your heart is being hardened towards it, towards that voice, or not? Because it's, because I think most of the time we think of hardening, we only think of like a defiant, like being hardened towards something is like what Pharaoh did, of just being defiant and just against it. And so we think of, well, if my heart was hardening towards God, I would find myself getting, like, I believe less in God, or I just don't, you know, we think we would notice it, but I think we don't. I think that's why there's the warning, is it's a little bit like a frog in boiling water. It happens a little at a time. You see it in friendships and relationships where it grows colder and colder and colder. And there's never like a moment where, you know, something big happened where you're just all of a sudden like, well, we're not friends anymore. But it just kind of, if you've ever grown apart from somebody over time, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, we've grown apart. That's what happens with God. And so that's why I was trying to point out some of these. You may not notice the hardening, but you might notice these other emotions that are more obvious, and you may have been like misattributing them to other things, if that makes sense. So that's how we got into the defensiveness and fickleness and apathy-ness.
You had mentioned, was it the apathy one that was the one that you struggled the most with that you mentioned?
I think to say I struggled with it the most is,
or the one that stands out to you.
I don't know. They all stood. They, okay. I could have given illustrations for myself in all of
for
them.
Everyone.
But yes, it, for me, that stood out, like I said, that I didn't realize that what was happening was my faith was becoming very intellectual and very, it's hard to explain, but there was a hardening of my heart, and I would attribute it, the sign I should have noticed was kind of apathy, where, and in that, then sin started to not be as big of a deal. Like nothing was a big deal. I was just getting more and more apathetic about everything. And I and the crazy thing is I was in full-time ministry at the time when I was struggling with that.
Yeah.
So it's not even, I mean, I was young, but I was in full-time ministry, and I saw how that can happen, how people, being in full-time ministry does not protect you from being hardened at all. There are, unfortunately, there are a lot of people, you know, I'm not saying majority or anything, but there are a lot of pastors that I've talked to, pastors in different denominations and in other in all kinds of different denominations, meaning, who don't really know if they believe, they don't have a thriving relationship with Christ, but they've done the work of the ministry for so long, they can do that. They can preach a sermon, they can counsel, they can lead a Bible study, but they've become cold and hardened. And I've seen it with any of those warning signs that I mentioned. But for me, apathy was starting to set in. And like I said, it was the turning point was realizing, holy cow, I don't think I ever pray in such a way where I am just foolish, you know, just pleading with God to do something. It's always measured. It's always qualified. It's always rational. It's always like, hey, I don't want to bother you with this, or, you know, like, hey, if it's not too much trouble. And realizing those are not the prayers, first of all, that God answers in Scripture. He never answers the, hey, no big deal either way, but, you know, if it's not too much trouble, I'd love to have, you know, when Jesus heals people, I think of blind Bartimaeus was a big turning point for me, is reading that and his shamelessness. Like, he just, no shame, calling out from the side of the road, Son of David, have mercy on me. And they're telling him to be quiet, you know, because he's making a fool of himself, and he just screams all the louder. And I remember thinking, reading that, going, I don't pray like that. Like, would I do that? And I think I wouldn't. I think I would, if I was Bartimaeus, I don't think I would have that much desperation.
Yeah.
And like putting all my eggs in that basket and just pushing all in and saying, either you answer me or I die right here. Like, then that's basically, you know, he's nothing to lose. And I realized I don't have that. And I allowed apathy to kind of set in.
That's also, in a way, one of the situations that comes to mind is the woman who was bleeding for 12 years, of how she had exhausted every other opportunity, like trying to be healed and trying to find her way back into society because she was outcast. And she just touches the hem of Jesus's robe. And then her goal is to kind of like get out of there, because she knew, she was like, oh, I'm healed. She like felt it. But Jesus takes the time, even in that moment, to not call her out of saying, like, why did you do this to me? Or like, why did you touch me and like make me unclean in this moment? But Jesus calls her out so that he can give her this new identity. And I think our fear oftentimes is, if we do that, if we do cry out honestly, and if we do cry out with the emotions and with the experience and with the honesty that God asks of us, I think we're fearful that he is going to respond the same way that people of the world do. That he's going to respond with, oh, like, why would you do that? Like, that's really dumb, or that's really foolish. But over and over again throughout, especially the New Testament, like, we see spaces where we are invited to be fools. And the fact that, like, God actually invites that, and like, he takes what is foolish of the world and, uses it in extraordinary and amazing ways. And like the story with the woman bleeding, like, she was given a new name and a new identity in that space. And she was finally able to be seen and to be acknowledged and to be welcomed, not just by anybody, but like literally by Jesus. And so I think that was, you touched on that, of how in those three signs of hard-heartedness, how there is something that we can individually do to combat that. We have to be active with it. It's like the whole awake thing. Like, when you're awake, you have to actively like take steps in order to go somewhere. There's individual ways we can do that. But also, I think there's so much healing that comes from being in community as well too. So can you give a few more examples of like the ways that we can heal from our hard-heartedness within community, and why community is important in that?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, right? That we don't know ourselves. So I think we have to remember that hardened hearts become normalized. And I tried to spend some time on that, but like, the reason why, nobody gets up every day and says, well, I'd like to be a little more apathetic today towards God. It happens over time. It is the frog in boiling water, and you need somebody else to say, hey, you're in boiling water. Hey, I don't know if this is, if you're in a good spot, or I'm concerned about you. So they can see things that you don't see. And so especially if you think about the other ones, like defensiveness. Here's what's hard about that. If you're defensive, if you have a defensive heart, that's a bad sign. It really is. So I could have given a lot of illustrations about myself in that, of
me too,
being confronted with things and feeling defensive. But that demonstrates that I'm not hearing God's voice. Because if you think about it, if I'm if I'm feeling defensive, that's what's going to lead to self-righteousness and judgment of others, because defensiveness comes from, you know, like, who are you to say this to me, or you don't see this correctly, or whatever. Well, think about it. If the person is wrong, then if you're hearing God's voice, what you're going to hear from God is, it's okay. I know what your intent was in that, and that's not accurate. And you're going to be content in that. You're not going to feel the need to defend yourself, because God is your defender. And if they're right, then the voice of God is going to be the gentle voice saying, hey, I want you to listen to this. This person's saying something true to you that I want you to hear. So does that make sense? Like, either way, whether it's God agreeing with that person and the voice of God is saying, this is true, listen to it, or if it's not, and the voice of God is saying, yeah, they're hurt right now, they're angry, they're not seeing things clearly. Either way, you're going to be at peace, and either way, your reaction is not going to be one of defensiveness. So defensiveness is a sign that you're not hearing it. And so what's hard about that is if someone trying to tell somebody who's defensive that they're being defensive is going to elicit a defensive, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're going to, that's like telling somebody who's angry that they're angry. Like,
calm down.
It makes them angry. Right. Like, yelling at somebody to calm down makes them angrier. And so it's so critical that we surround ourselves with people and give people permission to do that. Right. Like, you have to give permission to people. And it doesn't have to come from everybody. I mean, it wouldn't surprise anybody that the more public you are, the more people feel like it's their place to call you out on stuff. And so that happens to me. I mean, I've had all over the years, like, people who don't know me, really don't know me, say things and you're like, okay. But that still doesn't mean, just because they don't know me doesn't mean that God isn't still in that. Because I've had that situation where somebody who doesn't know me and they are misunderstanding a situation completely, but the voice of God is still saying, hey, but this thing, this is actually a real thing, and I want you to listen to this. And that's hard in those moments. But we've all had people who voluntarily, you know, give you, you know, will critique you. Some of us grew up with a lot of critique, and so we don't love it. So one of the ways to battle that is with community, to go to specific people that you know who love you and know you and are willing to say hard things to you, and say to them, I want to give you that place in my life. I want you to call me out. And I especially, and to confess to them, hey, here are some areas where my heart will subtly start pulling me. And it might be in the area of defensiveness and judgment, and I've had friends who have said that to me. They say, you know, hey, I feel my heart gets kind of swayed into feeling judgmental. So when you hear me being critical of a book or a pastor or a church or anything like that, would you just push back on that? Would you call me out on that? That's an important thing to do. Same way with apathy, you know, like, and then accountability after that. So whatever it is that you struggle with, and to let somebody know, or to ask somebody, do you see this in me? And then ask for accountability in that. Like I said, if it was apathy, and I mentioned on Sunday, singing, you know, and lifting your hands and singing, asking somebody who sings loudly to stand, like, would you sit with me so that I will learn how to do this, and so that I'll be covered. Like, nothing will free you to sing more than having someone who sings really loudly next to you. Right?
Like, especially if they're the type that sings like off key.
I think either way, yeah.
It's the best.
It's win-win.
It's my favorite.
If they're off key, then, I mean, now I will say, if you struggle to sing and you're next to somebody who's off key, then ain't no way you're finding the key. Like, you're going to be off key too, but that's fine. Who cares? But being around people who sing loudly and sing well, like, one thing to remember is if other people around you are singing loudly, they can't hear you.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they're, I mean, I think that there's a lot of times that, like, people are also just either they're more concerned with what they sound like, or the complete opposite is like they don't care what they sound like. Like it's the whole point is just to be like singing and praising Jesus. Yeah. And like my dad's not a bad singer, but he one of the things that I have always loved about him growing up is that he always sings hymns like super loudly, like so loudly. Like you could hear him anywhere, like in a church, you'd be able to hear his singing voice. And I had a moment a couple of weeks ago, I guess a couple of months ago, where he was next to me in church and he was just like singing, I think it was, I once was lost and dark as night. Hallelujah, all I have is Christ. And he had never heard that song before. And he was like he was like, oh, that was a really, really good song. And then right after that, we sang Amazing Grace. And that's one he knows super well because he's been in the Baptist church for a long time. But he gets in tears when he sings that song. And for me to be able to witness that, there are a lot of things that like we might not always agree on, like my dad and I think that happens, especially as you grow up. But to be able to see him in that space of just to have the reminder for myself, because it was a conviction for myself of just ways that I was like angry without with that, like I was angry in ways that like I wasn't actually like confronting and dealing with and admitting. And to have that moment where like my dad is just like fully singing praises to Jesus and in tears about it, and just like the fact that God would save a wretch like him, to see him moved in such a way was so helpful for me, and just reminding me of just like the change that Jesus makes in our hearts is legitimate and it is real, and that there's so much of like internally that is calling out to be able to connect with Jesus and to admit that, and to like you were talking about the story of where the Pharisee goes in and says like, thank God I'm not like this man. And then that man that beats his chest and says like, have mercy on me. And so I think it's helpful to see people around us doing that, to be able to remind us like that is something that we are all called to do together in community. Like we get to worship through music and through prayer together. It's not something that we just get to do on our own.
Yeah. There's something really powerful. And I think especially for men, it's a kind of a social stigma that men aren't supposed to be emotional like that. They're not supposed to sing. I mean, there's no question that if you did a survey of our church, a much higher percentage of women sing than men. So it's just a reality. And yet when you're in churches where you hear both, and you hear this strong, low, like lower, you know, tone of men singing, there's something powerful that happens in churches like that. That's not to discount like women singing in church is beautiful. But there is just something unique about that because it's countercultural, right? Like if you go to a concert, more women are going to be singing than men. That's just what happens. And so it's countercultural. If you go into a church and you see like all of these men singing and emoting like that, even regardless of whether they have musical ability or not, I think it's just a really powerful thing. And that is, again, you're talking about community. That's another thing. It would be really interesting if there are guys in our church or anybody, men or women, but if you're thinking, oh, you know what? I don't sing. I for years have mouthed the words or just I don't sing because I just say I don't sing. Get a group of people together. Talk to some other people and find some people who are saying, yeah, you know what? I want to do that more too. Great. Get a few of you together. Get a few people that you know who are also who sing loudly and do a whole section. Like, doesn't have to just be one or two people. You know, it's one of the powers of like camp songs. You know, we do it for VBS or whatever. Man, during VBS, people who never move at all, like are dancing and singing or whatever, because culturally that happens. Now, this is where I get pushback sometimes, even from people that I respect and agree with on most things of, well, you should just be doing that because you just feel compelled with God. Like you shouldn't be concerned at all with what's going on around you. And I understand that. And that's an interesting point. This is a whole side conversation or tangent. But I also think we are corporately worshiping together. And so part of what we are doing is teaching one another how to worship. You know, I don't just sing when I feel like singing. I also sing when I don't feel like singing, especially when my kids are around, because I'm teaching them how to worship. So I don't think the answer of authentic worship is only do what you feel like doing.
Yeah.
Right? Like there are disciplines where you're saying, I don't feel like singing right now. And so for me, I've gotten to a place where, and this is coming from a kid who grew up never singing in church and never wanting to sing. I'll sing louder when I don't feel like singing. And I don't think that's disingenuous, because again, you think about that sleep state, I'm laying hold of the claim of who I really am. Like in Christ, I am a person who wants to sing loudly to worship. And so from actually me acting in any other way is disingenuous. I mean, I don't mean that like fake, like you're being disingenuous, but it's not the reality, right? Like it's, so when people say, well, I don't feel like the important thing is authenticity. So if you feel like raising your hands, raise your hands. If you feel like singing, sing. Nah, I don't know. I feel like, no, there's also an act of the will, an act of the claiming of, no, I don't feel like this, but I know this is the reality. I know that who I am in Christ is a person who would be singing this at the top of their lungs. So I'm just going to lay hold of that identity, and I'm going to say this other identity, this is the illusion. Like me not wanting to worship right now or me not wanting to sing is the illusion. That's not the reality.
Yeah. It's that whole contrast between like motivation doesn't just happen. Like we can't always just do things only when we're motivated to do those things. Like sometimes you have to take the steps in order to become motivated. And so obedience doesn't come through just like, oh, I'm just going to obey when I feel like it. It's like, no, I'm going to continue to do this because I know this is like who he is calling me to be, even if I don't feel like it in that moment. And there's this, I think it was a psychologist who I was listening to that just was saying, the moment you say I love you the most, the moment when you feel it the least. So like to the people that are like close to us in our lives, like we have to remind ourselves like, no, like I do truly love you, but like my feelings are not what I'm going to ride on in this moment. And so that happens like in worship as well. Like this is something that like we want to actively and faithfully do, which I don't think it's as much of a tangent as you think it is, because the exposition of Psalm 95 that he gives in Hebrews 3, it's like hearing God's word in faith. And so there's the contrast of like actively listening and then responding in faith. And so in order to respond in faith, you have to actively listen. You have to actively pursue Jesus instead of wandering in a different way. Like the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness. Like they needed to actively trust God and say, okay, I'm going to give up all of these fears that I have. Because I think that's one of the things about dreams too, and the connection there is that our dreams usually reveal our fears a lot. Like I've struggled with having nightmares like since I was super little. Like when I was a kid, I would just pray. I had this like wild belief that I would get like possessed in my sleep. Sorry, this is kind of dark. But I would pray every night. I was like, Lord, like please like just like protect me. Like when I was like super little. And so I personally know that like there are a lot of like my own fears that are manifested in my dreams, but that doesn't mean the fear itself is real. The experience of that fear is very real, but that doesn't mean that that thing itself is real. And so I think it takes so much more effort to reorient ourselves. It's like when I wake up from a nightmare, I have to actively choose to read something like Psalm 23, like to remind myself of like, okay, what is the actual truth in this scenario? But I have to actively pursue what the truth is in order to believe that truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's the act of hardening of our hearts is that, just take that example of, go back to the example of singing, that if I don't sing today because I don't feel like it, then next week it's going to be easier for me to not sing and not feel like it. And over time, you're going to, you go down this path of, that's the hardening. That's the very thing. So yes, you have to step out in faith and trust that God will meet you there with the grace that you need, whether that's the the courage or the strength or the emotion or the feeling or whatever. I think that like this is, it's just one of the tensions of the Christian life that we try to hold here of, we can fall into the ditch of, well, it doesn't count if you don't want to. And what God really wants is your heart and your desires. So you need to pray that God will give you the desire to do this thing. Otherwise, it's all works righteousness. Well, that's a ditch. The other ditch is like, well, fake it till you make it and just do it. And that's what God really cares about. No, there's this tension. Like, yes, what God cares about is our heart. But our hearts are not separate from our bodies. Like they... Mm-hmm. You have to, I've used this as an illustration before, but it's what we do in our home of the 20-second hug. That when you're not feeling very affectionate, or if my kids are upset with me or whatever, there's tension there. You know, there's the thing where, you know, we'll start hugging them and then we'll start counting. And they hate it because the last thing they want to do is hug you for 20 seconds. But if I start counting, they know. We're hugging for 20 seconds, because at 20 seconds, like your body actually starts to inform your brain and your heart of, no, I do love this person. And I've said before how they now do it to me sometimes, you know, and which is pretty funny.
Oh, how
and,
the turntables.
Yes, how the turns have tabled. That's our little reference for no one that listens to our podcast, but,
that's fine.
So that tension, we always want to have that. If we don't want to settle for just doing the action. Like I would never say to a parent, well, just hug your kid. Even if you don't feel like it, hug your kid and that's good enough. Like it doesn't matter if you feel like it or not. You want to feel affection for your kid. Also hug your kid, even especially when you don't feel affection towards them. And I think... you know, you see that a lot with people in prayer and in reading scripture. People try to find, and this goes a little bit to the fickle one. I don't know how you felt about that. I feel like I was trying to think of ways. These are not the only signs of a hardening heart. So that's important. I don't think I ever qualified that and said, this is not an exhaustive list. I just was thinking, I feel like these are the three big ones that I see over and over again. And the fickle heart will... I lost my train of thought because you were cracking your knuckles. Good heavens.
I'm so sorry.
I'm going to write that time down, but I might leave that in the podcast.
Oh, man.
This is what I have to deal with on the fickle heart. The fickle heart and the wandering mind is basically what's going on. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What did you think about the, like, what? Let's talk about that, though, for a second. Because there are, so the actions, and we're trying to give steps to take. Because we do, then we have people who, and I've been in this boat too, where I'm not feeling defensive, I'm not feeling judgmental, but it's common right now, especially there are a lot of ministries where one of the types of preaching that people are drawn to are they basically call it like a, it's like a sadistic, like, or more masochistic, like people want to be convicted, they want to feel conviction.
Yeah, that was popular in a certain movement.
Yes. And it's still alive and well. Like some people are just like, because I want to feel it. It's like that 90s song.
Like punch me in the face.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You bleed just to know you're alive. There's a little 90s quote.
Ooh,
you know.
Google Dolls.
Yeah. There you go. And, but there's that, like, I just need to feel it. And so when I feel this, like, then I'm going to go read the Bible. That's what I was talking about. Like the mundane, just being in God's word feels mundane. As opposed to like, oh, I need to find the next book. I need to find the right study Bible. I need to find the right study, like something that motivates me and something that really drives me. But that's not really the answer to that. The answer is just start reading and be okay that you're like, okay, I don't know what I got out of that this morning, but I'm reading. And, but not be okay to stay there, like to just keep, you know, keep going. And so that's what I was trying to get at with the fickle heart. It's funny because I feel like, full disclosure, of those three, I thought going into it that the fickle heart one would be the one that I would get the most like responsive, just because personality wise, like if someone's there who's feeling, who's pulled towards defensiveness, I didn't expect in that moment they're going to be like, oh, you're right, that's me.
Because they were feeling defensive. Like,
yeah, by definition, they're probably going to have to sit with that for a little bit, and that's fine. Like, I would too. And if they're apathetic, I don't expect to get a response from them. The fickle crowd is the one that I expected to get like a, that's me. And I didn't feel that. I actually felt like I got the most response from the apathy, which was interesting.
And good.
It is good. Like, it was good. I felt like, oh, okay, you're with me there. What did you hear in that with the fickle, and how have you experienced that of like kind of the, cause in my life, it's been more of this big promise, like just big things. I want big experiences. I'm going to make big promises. I'm going to do big things. And I've found in my life, the antidote to that is to hear God in the quiet. And obviously, I'm not very sensitive. By definition, I'm not very sensitive to God's voice if it has to be really loud.
I think this one, I think, especially happens a lot as we're struggling more with our identity and like who we are, because I think we almost need like big moments to prove who we are and what we're like. We're like, okay, this is what I'm like. This is who I am. And so if it's in the midst of a like conversation with a student and I'm like, we're connecting, we're talking about the word, we're talking about what faith is like, we're talking about being with Jesus, and I'm like, yeah, this is it, big moment, this is what makes sense. But in those moments when you're having a conversation and it's not going anywhere, those moments when you send out a text message to check in with somebody and they don't respond, you're like, well, I thought that was going to be something more. Like, I think that happens a lot no matter where we are in faith. But I think in an antidote, comes from verse 13, but exhort one another each day as long as it is called today. And so it speaks to Paul or whoever is writing Hebrews. I don't necessarily think it was Paul. Who cares? Anyways, when we have to acknowledge that on our walk with Jesus, we are going to need daily reminders. Like, that's kind of what the whole Old Testament is all about, is like, you need to remember the covenant that you made with God. Like, and he is constantly remembering this covenant that he has made with you. And so how do we remember to look at the small things and the big things is that we ask God to remind us to remember. And I think there's a lot of tools in the modern day now that is like helpful for us to see the beauty in really, really small things. Liturgies are a huge thing. There's a book called Liturgy of the Ordinary that is like really, really awesome in reminding us to be intentional. But it again goes back to this idea of being awake. Like, if you are awake, that means that you are aware and you are being attentive to what's going on around you. And we talked about earlier this passage in 1 Kings. And it's in 1 Kings 19, 11 through 13. It says, the Lord said, he's talking to Elijah. And Elijah is running from this crazy lady named Jezebel. She wants to kill him because he the chapters before, he totally just owns the prophets of Baal and proves that their belief in their God is just like totally unfounded, versus like Yahweh is the one, like the one true God. He proves that. He's running away from Jezebel because she's mad. And but he's hiding. Like, he's like, Elijah's like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to serve. I just want to die. Like, I'm living in fear. And what God does is the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountain apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. In the wind there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, and the Lord was not in the fire. After the fire came a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And what's crazy about that, too, is in this calling of him, of Elijah, is like the Lord has appeared before in wind, and the Lord has appeared before in earthquakes, and the Lord has appeared before in fire. But he's specifically not in any of those spaces, because in Elijah's like desperation in that moment, what he needed was something much, much smaller. And that, because even though it was small, it was not insignificant. And I think that's one of the things that we end up doing when we have like these mindsets of just like, it needs to be either a big thing or a small thing, is like we end up missing the beauty of these ordinary moments and the beauty in the monotony of it, of just like this call that like God has for us, because we we forget that like the things that are ordinary to us are actually pretty extraordinary. Like you think about if like we walk outside right now and the sun is shining, like the fact that the sun is shining and that like we're not being scorched and the earth is like the perfect distance from the sun, like stuff like that. Like for us, it's really normal that like, oh, the sun's shining. Cool. But if we actually take a moment to be aware and to sit and be like, oh my gosh, like having a conversation with another person, it's like I am sitting in the presence of somebody who is in the image of God, that God cares so deeply for. And one of my goals, especially as like a youth leader, one of my goals is always to just be like, Lord, like how have you made this person? How are they unique and wonderful? And how can I see that more? And how can I encourage that in them? And so how can I exhort them to be like, you are made in the image of God and he has made you for this, and that there is more to life than just what we experience in these temporary moments, and like calling people to remember that, but also calling people to be okay with sitting and slowing down. And I think part of the reason why we like look for the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows, and we only find God in those spaces sometimes, or we think we find him in those spaces, is because we're afraid of slowing down and experiencing the in-between phases. It made me think of a car. Like, so if you're driving on the highway and it's really inefficient for you to constantly gun it, like press the gas super hard, get really close to a car that's right in front of you, slam on the brakes, and then go to pass them again and then gun it and then slam on the brakes and gun it and slam on the brakes. It's much better if you just have a really consistent speed. It's better for your car. It's better for the amount of gas mileage that you're going to be using. It's better for you, for your cortisol levels and your stress levels while you're driving. But sometimes we kind of treat our spiritual life like we're in this space where like we're just constantly gunning it, or we're slamming on the brakes. So we're gunning it or we're slamming on the brakes. And so, but the call to live more slowly, and the call to recognize beauty in ordinary things is actually going to be better for us in the long run. And so I think we're afraid of longevity, honestly. I think we're afraid of the fact that, oh, this is a whole lifelong journey, that you're not going to have it figured out right now. And that's okay.
Yeah, and I think we're afraid. I think in the fickle heart, when I've struggled with this, it's a little bit like if you've ever been around a toddler, usually like around two or younger, one, I don't remember. Now I'm removed from that. But there's a stage where toddlers need to come and like touch mom. They'll be playing in another room or whatever, and then they'll just like randomly come in and they'll just, it's this phenomenon, and it's like they have to be reminded that, oh, you're still here, everything's still okay. And when I've been in these fickle states, I felt that way, where, yeah, I think sometimes slamming on the accelerator and then the brakes, and but I'm afraid that if it's quiet, that means that God's not here. And so if you don't learn to hear him in those quiet moments, then I think that's part of the fear of like, oh no, like what if this feeling goes away? And if I don't feel like I did yesterday, does that mean I'm losing my faith? Does that mean my heart is hardening? Am I going into apathy? I mean, that's what I thought, like the person that's fickle would be like, oh no, am I defensive? Oh no, am I like apathetic? Mm-hmm. But the thing that I wish I'd had more time to in the conclusion, and kind of how I would conclude this is like, if we learn to listen to God's voice in this, it's just so much better. Like, think about, it's the opposite of those things that, I was just thinking about, if God softens my heart and cures me of a defensive heart, then I become much more secure in my identity in him. Like, as I hear him, like I said, if someone criticizes you or brings something to your attention, you don't have to be defensive regardless, whether they're right or they're wrong. If you're hearing God's voice, you're either going to be gently told, yes, this is something, or no, this isn't. And you know, you're secure in either way. It's just so much better to be a person who can receive that, and not get defensive, to not be judgmental, to be able to be compassionate and to seek to understand others and to not rush to judgment. That's just a better, way more free, way more joyful way to live. When I think about a fickle heart, it's just, you get a steadfast heart instead. You get, as you listen to God's voice, like you feel more and more secure that he is with you, and that quiet moments are the beautiful moments. And yeah, you still can have mountaintop experiences and some really profound things, but then you basically then don't have the lows because you're faithful in the small things, and small things do become big things. And so that's just better. And it's just way more better to have a vibrant, passionate faith than an apathetic faith, right? Like, you know, it's just better. You see it that there are people, and it, look, this again, this is not a shaming or judgment thing, but when you think about what we get to do on Sunday mornings, for example, that we get to gather with our brothers and sisters and sing and encourage each other and pray together and ask God to do things in our community and to hear the word of God, you know, in together, so that we can then talk about that and process that with each other. That should be the highlight of our week. It should be, and not in a fake way. Like, cause sometimes you're like, oh, it's the highlight of my week, and we're just kind of saying it, but in genuinely, it genuinely should be the best thing, you know, the most exciting thing that happens to us in any given week. And we don't all feel that, right? And we certainly, I don't know anybody that feels that every week, or very few people that I've known who feel that every week. I think some of our older saints who've really been formed into this and have heard God's voice and been sensitive to God's voice over decades, they can get to that place, you know, but it's just better. Like, how much better is it to be excited to go to church on Sunday morning, to be excited to be, I've heard people, there have been seasons of my life with daily quiet times where I've felt that. And it had nothing to do with the study I was doing or the book I was reading or anything. There have been seasons of my life where I've just so looked forward to just being in God's presence in just very normal, everyday ways. And then there are other times where I haven't. It's just better to feel that. So that's what we get when we are, when we hear God's voice and we don't harden our hearts towards it, but we actually turn to him, we listen to him, then he gives us, you know, security. He gives us steadfastness. He gives us passion. He gives us affections, like all those things that we want. And they're just better. Mm-hmm. So that'd be the encouragement. And like we always say this, and Tiffany, like you mentioned earlier, that this is all done in community. And that's, you know, it's funny, that whole exhort one another, as long as it's called today, normally that would have been, and I mentioned this a little bit, normally that would have been the centerpiece of the sermon, especially for me, because I'm always like pushing towards community and family. I just felt like we needed to sit in the other part of it. But that does not mean it's not important. It's critically important.
It's still in community too. Like, you get to, the exhortation comes in community just as much as like sitting in those hard moments, because I think we need each other for both. Like, we need each other. We need to be called out by one another in love, like speaking that truth in love, but we also need to be in encouragement with one another at the same time.
Yeah, and my encouragement in that would be, we have to learn to trust one another in that. And stop thinking that everybody else has it all together, or that they think they have it all together. When people struggle to connect in community, it's typically one of those two things. They either think that they're a mess and everybody else has it together, and so they feel foolish, or they think that everyone else thinks that they've got it together, and so they're like, they see them as judgmental. And the irony is that if you think that about people, then you're the one being judgmental. It's kind of like with the whole click thing, when people say, oh, there's a bunch of clicks. Usually the people who are complaining about clicks are the clickiest, because they're the ones who are kind of exclusion. They're like, well, most people aren't thinking that. Most people are dealing with their own stuff and are struggling themselves. And it can be really freeing to say to somebody, hey, I'm struggling with apathy. And you might be surprised that somebody would respond of, yeah, I've struggled with that too. So don't let the enemy tell you that people don't want to connect and people don't want to exhort one another. I can't say everybody wants that, but by and large, if you're coming to church every week, you're not coming to church to be alone. Yeah. There's lots of better places to be alone. There's lots of places here to be alone. Yeah. If you want to be alone in Northeast Wisconsin. Yeah, you can be alone. And so sometimes people are scared of like, well, I don't know if they want to talk. Here's one tip in this, by the way. After the service, look around for people who are just kind of standing still in their spot. I'm telling you, after decades of ministry, if someone is standing in their spot, that means they want to talk to somebody, but they don't know who to talk to. And I get it. Some people bolt right after.
Oh yeah.
They run away. I get it. I've tracked them down sometimes in the parking lot or whatever.
Literally run them down.
I literally run. Well, not in my car. Like, no, you know, yeah. But like I've ran after them and called. Yeah. And so that's okay. You know, look, some people, there's a lot of reasons why people do that. And that's okay. Like that they're where they are in that moment, but they're every Sunday I look around, and when I finish the benediction, I look around and I see people who are staying put. They're standing where they, and those are people. So if you see people like that, those are people who want to connect, and sometimes they're scared to. Sometimes they're because they're new and they don't know anybody. They're waiting. They don't know who they should talk to. So I just want to encourage you, if you're listening to this podcast, by definition, if you're listening to this podcast, you're somebody who is like investing. Like, we don't have too many people who listen to the podcast who aren't invested. And so in one way or another, so then be invested in this way, like seek out community and help other people find that. And on Sunday, look for somebody that's standing still after the service. That'll be funny because some of them may be trapped in the middle of a row.
Yeah, and then they can't get out, and so they don't actually want to be there. But
they may not, but that, you know, mm-hmm. If it would make you feel better to wait until they have a clear path of exit, then by all means. But
don't make eye contact. Yeah. If you don't want to talk, don't make eye contact. If you do make eye contact with one of us, we will most likely follow it up by coming up to talk to you.
You're talking about for us. Yeah, I'm talking about everybody else. That's a whole other thing. It's just a way to help other people get connected. So make sure you connect. You can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. Talk to us after a service. Or, like I said, find somebody else who's trapped in the middle of a row and go say hi.
It's okay. You got to embrace the awkward, and it's a good thing.
Embrace the awkward. There's no way to community except through awkwardness.
I second that notion.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. We hope that it has been helpful to you. Until next time, grace and peace.